Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann returning this week.
Bond Lindemann over here.
Mm-hmm. Lindy comes but once a year. We also have James Jones.
Easy, James.
Let's get, move on
Don't
to Guillaume.
Don't take the bait, buddy. Don't take the bait.
Let's go to Guillaume. Hurry up.
That was a James Bond joke. Hey, we also have Guillaume Veillette.
Yeah, from The World Is Not... No, wait. The other one. The one after that with Christmas Jones. Terrible.
Yes. Dr. Christmas Jones. Well, we are all here talking about James Bond for no good reason, because we're actually mainly going to talk about Nintendo and Nintendo-related such things as we do every week. And, you know, we promised last week that we would get back to the Nintendo Direct because there were so many different things going on there, so many things we didn't even have time to talk about last week, and things that we didn't hear from John yet. We're going to be trying to cover a lot of listener mail. We're going to get through as much as we can, and quite a bit of it is related to the Nintendo Direct, but also Club Nintendo and the Zelda delay and other things of recent note. But first up, we're going to do new business. And John, since you missed last week, I thought you should go first.
Yeah, I've been playing Axiom Verge. I actually streamed it on Twitch. I was very very proud of myself. Had three people watch me for 3 hours.
Cool,
maybe they were
wow.
maybe they were bots. I don't know.
Maybe they fell asleep.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe they died.
Yeah, they got to see my shoddy gameplay. But yeah, Axiom Verge. You know, I was very curious to see. You know, after you know Johnny raved about it. And also after playing Ori and the Blind Forest, which is, you know, a similar genre, Johnny, I think you'd be impressed. I made notes for this. I made notes.
Really?
Yeah. Typically I'm so good, I just wing it. But yeah,
you got to send us a picture now. I bet it's all, like, penises or something, just like in Superbad.
Can we isolate...
There's only a couple of penises, and they are ASCII art, so...
Can we isolate this conversation about penises for future insertion into other episodes?
Insertion, huh?
Nice choice of words, James. All right, so...
I know what I'm doing.
My overall impression of it after putting 3 hours into it... So I beat the first three bosses,
Okay.
You know,
it's a good chunk. It's a good start.
Yep. So, Johnny, let me see if this rings true. This is kind of my takeaway, because I was trying to kind of characterize this game in my mind, and I think I have it. To me, this game reminds me of if Tecmo would have made a clone of Super Metroid.
Oh,
that's what it reminds me of. Meaning, and that's not a bad thing.
Before people send us hate mail.
No, I'm not talking like techno now where they're all stupid. I'm talking like this is like late 80s, early 90s Tecmo where they would have actually
like
made
Ninja Gaiden 3.
Yeah, like that kind of Tecmo.
Well,
like
Ninja
Gaiden
2, maybe.
Yeah, you know how they kind of made games that were really, really good and almost Nintendo quality, but they maybe lacked a little bit of polish here and there, or there was something that was maybe every once in a while kind of janky about it. That's what this kind of reminds me of. Really, really
maybe,
good, though.
Or maybe tried something that it just, for whatever reason, seems like Nintendo would not try in their version of it.
Exactly. And it works for the most part, but maybe isn't. Maybe Tecmo would take a chance on it, whereas Nintendo would be like, no.
Yeah.
No, this is not nearly polished enough to be in our product. So that's what this kind of reminds me of. I mean, the fact that this was made by one guy is ludicrous. Completely ludicrous. And, you know, in terms of the gameplay, I mean, it's a very, It stays true from what I've played so far. It stays true to the Metroid formula. So if you've been jonesing for a Metroid game that is very Metroid-y, then just buy this game. I mean, you'll love it.
Yeah, like it doesn't mess around with any kind of RPG stuff. So it's not a Metroidvania. There's no vania in this.
Yeah,
it's not really related at all to Symphony of the Night or, you know, any of the later Castlevania games. It's much more. It's like pre-Symphony of the Night Metroid game design.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So Symphony of the Afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that really struck me right away is the jumping is really, really tight. It's one of the things in the game I think that really, really works and really, really feels good, especially for during boss battles. Because the boss battles are, you know, of course they're typically pattern based, but they require precise jumping and, you know, like, a lot of the stuff they throw at you kind of early, like, you know, where you can, you know, make platforms appear and disappear and that kind of stuff. Very inventive stuff. And it, you know, they don't really cheap out making things easy for you necessarily at any point. Or I should say he, since one guy did it. But it's good. The music is really good. It loops a little bit too much for my taste, but the music was really, really good. Did he do the music too?
Yeah.
Holy crap. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
I mean,
some of the later sections of the, like some of the regions that you kind of access later in the game have my favorite music.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I have to keep reminding myself that this was all done by one, cause he did the whole thing, right? He did the music, the art, programming.
He did it all.
Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, I'm sitting
the
here.
The only other person in the credits with any kind of actual like production role is Dan Adelman, who did the marketing for it.
Yeah.
Basically, after the game was, you know, more or less finished, starting last fall, Dan Adelman came. This was after he was on our show, which was last late summer, early fall, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long after that, he officially joined up with Tom Happ to do the marketing and the PR for Axiom Verge. But that was, you know, I don't think he had any direct input other than maybe he helped with some playtesting, you know, just like a few other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's the real deal. I mean, all of the kind of the cutscenes look great. All the artwork is great. Hey, it's super impressive. The weapons, I feel like the weapons at the start are kind of so-so. I don't know if they improve later on. I'm assuming you probably get some pretty cool stuff later on, but I think I'm about 5 weapons deep, and the only ones that are really good are the kind of like the default one, because you can shoot quickly and it's fairly powerful. And then Nova is also useful just because you can, you know, send it out there and detonate it when you want in the air.
But yeah, the other, yeah. Nova throws off the pacing a little bit because it's kind of slow and you have to push the button multiple times to get it to work. But
yeah.
Let me tell you, John, I believe there are 20 primary weapons in the game,
mm-hmm.
and the vast majority of them are optional, and you may never find them. Apparently, there's one gun in the game that Tom claims no one has found yet.
Wow.
And the game's been out for 2 weeks?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, because I mean, you can tell. I mean, you can see there's a whole bunch of them in there, and you can tell like right away that you start finding them at a very fast clip. It's not like Super Metroid where there's usually quite large gaps between, you know, getting new guns and stuff like that, or whatever the equivalent of that.
Well, in Super Metroid, there's only 5 guns in the whole game.
Yep. So it really spaces them out, and a lot of what you do in any one area is based on those guns. Whereas here, it's more about stuff like the drill that you get and the decoder thing that you get. A lot of that kind of stuff is Let's see. The story is okay. The way I would describe it is very like 80s video gamey. Like, you know, you're the chosen one. You must save this alien race. Da da da. It's cool.
Yeah, it unfolds a little bit more. There's a little bit more layering to it than that. Once you get later on.
Yeah.
The story, I wasn't crazy about at first, but towards the end of the game, it really blooms into something a little more mysterious and a little more interesting. And there's a lot of lore that's hidden in like notes that are hidden around the game map. And so you find these things in bits and pieces. A lot of them are in different languages that you can't read until you get some kind of decoder password.
Yeah.
And so I think the story, it builds and builds as you continue to explore. And there's still a lot of it that I don't understand yet because I haven't found all the little pieces yet.
Yeah. You can tell it's a very large game world. I mean, the thing is, I always felt that Super Metroid kind of encourages you to completely explore an area, you know? But this just seems to kind of, like Axiom Verge seems to kind of like push you forward. Like, it doesn't necessarily encourage you to go back right away, because in Super Metroid, you can come in. I mean, as soon as you get something new, you're like, oh, well, you know, cool. I can now go back immediately and, you know, go through all these other areas because I remember, you know, here I had to do this and, you know, here I saw that this area I couldn't get to, da, da, da. But with Axiom Verge, it's kind of like, you know, you're always getting new stuff, you know, it may not necessarily force you to go make it obvious that you can go back and get a bunch of stuff that you couldn't get before. So
yeah, and I think there's at least a couple of places throughout the main game progression where you'll like walk off of a tall ledge when you go into a new area, and then you can't go backwards until you find a pretty significant upgrade that lets you actually get back up to the ledge that you fell off of. Or there, or there's some, you know, other mechanical equivalent to that. So basically it kind of, it forces you to keep going forward and discover new things before it lets you sort of like go fully recursive and like start exploring every little tiny nook and cranny in every place that you've already been to. It kind of makes you get deep enough into the game that you've actually kind of gotten some of the momentum and gotten some of the hooks of the story and of the main progression before you can kind of turtle up and go and, really go intensively exploring. So I think, I mean, because the thing is, even if you're going forward, you're still exploring because you never really know exactly where to go. So you're still, you know, there's two or three or four different ways you could possibly go down and you're not really sure which one is which. You go down one and the enemies are too hard or the, you know, the platforms seem like they're unattainable, and so you double back. But in terms of going back to, like, the previous region, like, you know, in Super Metroid, I don't think there's really any point in the game that you can't double back all the way back to your ship at the beginning if you want to.
Yep.
And in Axiom Verge, there's definitely a few places where they kind of – they cut you off from the previous areas that you were in and kind of force you to focus a little bit more on this new place that you don't know at all yet.
Yeah, now – comparing it to Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Blind Forest is more like, you know, you can go all the way back to where you started at any time. And it's very obvious when you get something new, you know, you're like, okay, now I can go back through all those other areas and do this and this and that. So you'll, you know, you'll kind of do like a side quest, kind of a half an hour or an hour, just going back and retraversing all these areas because, you know, it's very obvious where, like, what you can't get to. Graphically, I would say the graphics in some areas are a bit garish, but they have some really, really cool environments. Like just seems really, really wide open. I mean, there's a lot of different and the way things are designed, it kind of reminds me, some of it reminds me of like, you know, kind of like Contra 3. Some of it reminds me of Super Castlevania 4. Like you can see those subtle, you know, design cues kind of thing. So it's not just a Super Metroid clone. It's kind of like a, sort of like a 16-bit, you know, tribute to some of those other games as well. You know, the way you can lock, you know, you can lock your gun in place and just in some of those areas, I was like, this reminds me exactly of an area out of Super Castlevania 4.
And especially some of the later guns that you might find, I think will probably remind you more of Contra. And and really, when you get into those big boss battles, it feels a lot like Contra.
Yeah.
Because the action, you know, Super Metroid is the jumping and shooting action isn't all that sophisticated. So a lot of the bosses are actually really straightforward. You know, if you think about fighting Ridley or Kraid in that game, it's really like finding the safest spot that you can and just kind of jumping up and down a lot.
Yep.
And then, you know, you hope that his life runs out before your missiles run out. I mean, there's not a ton of subtlety to the tactics that you have to use in Axiom Verge. I'd say there's quite a bit more thought put into those boss encounters and they tend to have more varied attacks that evolve, as you go through. I can think of one or two in particular that are really these kind of epic and very difficult also. I mean, they're really challenging and they really force you to kind of think about, the different abilities that you have and how to combine them in weird ways for combat that you haven't really had to do against the normal enemies.
Yeah. I mean, I'm playing on normal and the very early bosses are pretty easy. They're pretty straightforward, but you could tell. I mean, even like the third boss, I had to try several times at that just because the way it was set up, there was a lot of timing involved. There was a lot of dodging, a lot of timing, and it wasn't specifically obvious, you know, where to shoot him and stuff like that. So there's a lot of trial and error. So it's not just like kind of pushover because, I mean, Super Metroid, some of the bosses they're pushovers.
Yeah.
You know, they're really not that difficult. It's very obvious where to hit them, very obvious how to kill them. But not the case in Axiom Verge. Axiom Verge it's fairly demanding even on normal. Not that it's impossible at all, but you definitely will die a little bit. Yeah. I mean, other thoughts, I mean, in terms of, you know, you mentioned Johnny, when you were talking about it, you know, that you can tell this is very much a game, you know, made for the PS4, especially with the boss battles where they try some different stuff, like scaling out and, you know, zooming out, zooming in kind of thing. Which I thought was really
cool. Yeah,
that's
pretty awesome. It's an awesome moment when you see it.
Yeah.
The engine does something that you didn't actually know that it could do.
Yeah, that you didn't expect. That actually, I mean, I've never actually seen that done with a 2D game, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it done with 2.5D games because that's sort of what they're supposed to do because they have that 3D element to them. But the entire screen kind of scaling out, like you know, zooming out and zooming in kind of thing, that was really, really cool. It was really impressive. And, you know, when the bosses explode, they kind of do this sort of like voxel-y kind of explosion kind of thing,
yeah.
Which is really cool. So yeah, I mean, it's very much the Metroid-y equivalent of like a Shovel Knight type of thing where
mm-hmm.
it's definitely has its roots in this case in 16-bit games, but it definitely takes advantage of, you know, what the new consoles have to offer. So, I mean, it's good, man. It's really good. Now the thing is, like me, it was interesting. I was really interested to play this because, you know, obviously I loved Ori and the Blind Forest. Loved that game. Which one do I like more? I don't know. Ori and the Blind Forest, I felt like it was more impactful, like just more artistic, and it was more kind of like, you know, it was less straightforward. That game just, I mean, visually it's incredibly impactful. The story is really impactful. Axiom Verge is kind of more, it's, you know, like I said, it sticks more to that Metroid-ish formula. So it's kind of, really depends on what you're looking for. But if you like this kind of game, you should play both of those games because they're both different enough to, I mean, like I'm going from Ori and the Blind Forest to Axiom Verge back to back and it's not like I would feel this, you know, it's like if I play like Grand Theft Auto 4 and then play Grand Theft Auto 5, I'm like, I don't want to play Grand Theft Auto 5. I just had the same experience. You know what I mean? Like even though they are the same series, but those games are so friggin' similar. And I feel like that with a lot of other games too, where it's like if you play two games in the same genre, like, you know, first person shooters, perfect example. You know, I play one, I'm like, I'm done with first person shooters for a while, even if it's like Halo and something else, like it could be Far Cry or whatever. I'm just done with the genre. But with this, they're in the same genre, but those two games are different enough that I can play them back to back and really have a totally different experience.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I haven't played Ori yet, but it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, I highly recommend it.
I'm looking forward to it for sure.
But yeah, Axiom Verge definitely gets a big thumbs up from me. If definitely Metroid fans need to get it. Hopefully it comes to Wii U, but probably not.
Yeah, I would guess that most of our listeners have seen kind of the scuttlebutt around Axiom Verge, but mm-hmm. since my initial praise for it before the review embargo went up, I mean, it's been getting lavish praise from across the board. So it's definitely not just me. I know there were lots of jokes about money hats and bias and stuff like that, but I'm totally in the consensus on this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you are too. So welcome to the club, John. That's why I'm happy that we're talking about it as much as we have been here on this show, because I feel like, you know, Nintendo fans who might otherwise not have checked it out, I really think if you can, you should. And it is coming to PC in July, I think.
In May.
So I think that'll open it up to a lot more people who don't have PS4 or Vita.
Yeah.
The Vita version will be out, I think, late this year. But, yep, it's amazing. Okay, well, let's move on to Guillaume.
So at some point on Twitter, John tweeted something about me, just like, I don't even remember. I took umbrage. It had something to do with the fact that I don't play FPS games, which is true, but he was implying that I hate them no matter what, or
well,
it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. The point is, because of that, I was like, hey, I'm going to be playing an FPS game for like the next month, like, or several FPS games for the next month. And really,
For context, you were talking about Bioshock Infinite and you said that you didn't like it. And I said that, well, you saying you don't like a first person shooter is like me saying I don't like a platformer because I'm not like a huge fan.
You like the good ones, though.
Yeah.
Like you still enjoy.
Yeah. But
so I think Ori or platformers. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I took umbrage with. I was like, well, I don't have a disdain for any and every FPS game. I enjoy quite a few of them. I'm just very particular as to what I enjoy. But anyway, it's mm-hmm. almost beside the point because I was just thinking, okay, I'm going to try to do like a change of pace on the podcast. I'm going to talk about FPS games and I'm going to be at the same time kind of knocking off my backlog. All those FPS games that I've bought and never played. And if I happen to troll John at the same time, well, you know, cool. And if not, then, you know, no big loss.
He's going to be trying to trolling.
Yeah, well, you know. Anyway, so, well, when you hear that I've been playing Geist, I think you'll understand.
Oh, hey, it's
Geist was on your backlog?
It was. I bought it for
10 years.
No, well, for some reason, I had a friend online who was getting rid of his GameCube collection. I was like, yeah, sure, this is cheap enough for me to give it a shot, especially since I had listened to your retroactive on episodes 163 and 165, and you guys
I can't believe we did two episodes all played on Geist. It.
You did. One of them was quite mellow. It was more of an interview of Jeff Callis, the producer. Sure, right. And let's just say that the criticism was kind of muted. And then two episodes later, I think that the claws came out. And you guys were a little bit more frank and honest about what you thought
about
the game.
Those boss battles? I mean, yeah. Geez.
Yeah, they're not good.
Geist has issues, okay?
Yeah,
and I
it
think
does.
Jeff was pretty upfront about some of those issues as well. I think he knows what that game is.
Yeah. So. I'm not going to go over what the game is. Like, you can listen. Those old podcast episodes are still enjoyable. And you guys, you know, because I re-listened to them, and you guys touched on a lot of the points, a lot of the observations that I had, that I made while I was playing it. Like, the whole point-and-click adventure feel of it really stood out for me, because I'm a big fan of, you know, LucasArts adventure games, and I really felt like, okay, so I'm supposed to use this object with that object and combine them to do this, and it has that same logic in this game, except that I also thought that the game introduced one of the worst elements of point-and-click adventure games, one that people revile, and it's the whole pixel hunt thing. I feel like in every stage, at some point, like, you're not sure where to go, and you have to kind of move your reticle over everything, every single object, and then, you know, you have to see, okay, can I possess it? Can I pick it up? And some of them are really not obvious, and I had to check an FAQ at some point, because there was a valve, you know, a gray valve that did not stand out at all on a brown pipe that I had to turn to open up the exit, and that was the very end of the level. But I actually, like, restarted that level fully because I couldn't see the valve, and it just, anyway, it was not a great experience.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
And another sticking point, that goddamn shower scene. Holy crap. So, you know, very quickly in the game, in Geist, you play basically a ghost. Like, you've been separated from your body, and you can hunt objects, you know, dog food and other things also. And you try to scare people, so that you can then take over their bodies. And, there's one scene where there's this guy peeping through a peephole. Like, he's just like, oh, what? Oh, I'm not doing anything. And then he goes away. And then that turns into an entryway for your spirit. And you can go through that, and turns out that it's, you know, the women's shower in this, like, military complex. And I thought, this is such a GameCube, PlayStation 2, Xbox era kind of thing, you know? Like, it just reminded me of the Guy game. It reminded me of BMX XXX. It's exactly the same kind of thing. It's like, I was like, what is this? This is fucking, like, Porky's?
Everything's extreme, man. Like Manhunt. Everything was extreme back then.
Just the whole, like, titillation aspect of it, except mm-hmm. it's a Nintendo published game. So, you know, she's got, like, suds, very tastefully and very luckily placed suds, like, everywhere from, you know, and on her breasts and elsewhere. And not that I looked or anything, it's just, you know.
Hey, it's right there, you know?
Yeah, it is right there. I thought, like, there's kind of this, I don't know, it really struck me, like, there's this kind of casual sexism in the game. The woman that you're peeping at is a doctor, you know, she's like a medical doctor and she's, you know, enjoying her bath or whatever. And then you go and you look at the various items around and your ghost, I'm not sure whose voice it is supposed to be. I'm not sure if you're the guy that you're, the military guy or the mercenary guy that you're playing as, John Raimi, if he's kind of an asshole or if it's supposed to be, I don't know, he has weird comments sometimes when you look at certain objects, but you look at her bag of stuff and he's like, oh, a woman's best friend, hair care products. And I'm just like, like, this is a medical doctor. Like, she's, you know, she studied for years. And all you have to say is that, oh, like, look at how vain she is. She uses shampoo. Go fuck yourself. What the hell? And there's another scene where, like, this, you know, obviously evil guy is, I don't know, they're looking at your buddy's not corpse, he's not dead yet, but basically he says, we're gonna let him die. And that same woman is like, no, I can just give him this injection and he's gonna feel better. And he just, you know, smacks one, in her face and just like, you know, she goes down and like, then very calmly, no, we're gonna do no such thing. Let him die. And all these things combined together, just, I don't know. Maybe it sticks out more to me just because Anita Sarkeesian, even though her critique of video games might be flawed, and even though like she might misrepresent some games sometimes, she definitely brought some issues to the forefront. So I'm kind of wondering, am I oversensitive to this just because, you know, I've seen some of the points that she's made and they kind of seem to land, you know, like they kind of seem to have some truth to them. I'm not sure if I would have noticed this kind of stuff before.
Well, but I definitely notice it now. It doesn't really seem to serve the story either. It's just kind of there to be there.
Well, right. It helps accentuate that the bad guy is the bad guy. I mean, I'd be disturbed if the good guy was, you know, hitting women and throwing them around.
But there's no reason for it. And it just seems like, you know, she kind of denounces that kind of like casual. It's a very easy way. It's kind of a shortcut. It's a trope, really, look at this guy. He's evil.
It's a cheap way to make the bad guy bad.
Right. Yep. And alone, maybe I would have let it go. I would have been like, okay, that's, you know, that was for shock value. But then the whole, like, oh, a woman's best friend, hair care products. I'm just like, what are you guys doing? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to that extent, though, couldn't you make the same argument that that's basically depicting your military buff man going like, oh, yeah, that's how he thinks a woman, man.
Yeah. Did the voice sound like Duke Nukem by any chance?
Like, your character is not some sort of, I don't think he's any kind of satire or any kind of, I don't know, like, most of the time when you look at something and you comment.
Every character in that game is satire.
I don't think satire kind of implies that there's self-awareness, you know? I don't think it's the case here. And a lot of times, like, you look at items and he comments and it's just stupid and it's unfunny and it's not even, you wonder why the developer bothered, you know? Like, you look at the recycling bin and like, oh, folks believes in recycling. And okay, like, why, what is that, you know?
Yeah, why go out of your way to add that in there?
It's just, it ain't exactly Portal.
No.
But I'm kind of delighted that you consider this a first-person shooter, because it's, I mean, I guess you can make that argument, but it's bare, this is probably less a first-person shooter than Metroid Prime.
You don't shoot very frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shooting parts are by far the worst thing about the game, in my opinion, but they don't come around that often.
Yeah, no, they don't. And it's kind of weird. Like, if you were to try to play it as a first-person shooter, you would be disappointed. It is weird that you basically can't discard or pick up new weapons. You have to basically discard bodies and switch to, like, if you want to have a shotgun, you better possess someone who has a shotgun. And, you know, he might just be in that one level and you'll never see it again, you know? The shooting is serviceable. I guess I don't mind it all that much because I'm actually surprised at how well the GameCube controller works with, first-person shooters. I don't remember liking it all that much, but, I think it's very responsive. Like, you can see that there is some, you know, how do you call that when the reticle kind of sticks to the target a little bit? Auto-aiming?
Yeah.
There is some auto-aiming, but no more than in a Halo game. And,
Didn't you play a lot of Time Splitters 2 on GameCube?
I did. And
so you should already be used to it from that.
Yeah, but it's been forever, you know.
It's been since RFN 400.
I know, but that was like for all of 30 minutes.
Hold on. That turned Guillaume into a monster. Let's not bring that back up.
Yeah.
Well, we can use that to, again, make the point that I don't hate first-person shooters. In fact, I can be pretty good at them, and I'm kind
Hyde
of an
loves
asshole.
First-person shooters.
Yeah. I know.
I'd like to see you play one. I mean, Geist is not a first-person shooter, but...
You're not a first-person shooter, John.
No, I'm not.
But I did play Time Splitters 2 against you, John, and I'm pretty sure I was winning. But anyway.
Yeah. Great, he's back.
It's like, so you've played first-person shooters from 13 years ago. Okay.
I've played a few.
You know?
Fight!
The last one that I really got into was Left 4 Dead 2. I played that for quite a few months with a bunch of friends, and it was fun. I think
that's definitely a first-person shooter. I mean, mm-hmm. that's more hardcore than anything I play in that
and
genre.
And I played it on a PC, and I think that helps, because my main... first-person shooter console, I guess, would have been last generation, and still this generation, would be the PlayStation 3. And the DualShock 3 is terrible for first-person games. And any kind of shooter, I really hate using that thing to try to, you know, to slide a reticle across some target, because it just doesn't work. This huge dead zone in the middle, and I don't like it. It's terrible.
It's real bad.
But yeah, guys, I say... I would tell people, do not pay anything for that game. listen to episodes, Radio Free Nintendo 163 and 165. And ultimately, just keep in mind that everyone but me is wrong. This game is not really worth checking out.
Back of the box quotes galore.
Yep. Back of the 15-year-old box.
One of the most flawed... and mixed games that we've done for Retroactive.
It's not the most flawed, though, to be clear.
Maybe not, but it's up there. Because by and large, for Retroactive, we tend to do games that are, in some sense, classics. You know,
I think we should renege on that and just start doing just horse shit every week.
Well, I mean, I think Twilight Princess has some significant drawbacks that we'll talk about.
Well, if we look at this as a way to help me get rid of my backlog, I think playing garbage would help. Yes. Can I just pick the next five games?
I'm looking forward to the Wappy Dog Retroactive Guillaume wants us to have.
Oh God, no.
So Guillaume, what's your next first person shooter? Maybe Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
I'll just go to Oblivion. Fuck you, John. Fuck you.
Elder Scrolls Oblivion is the next first-person shooter game.
John, we're not trying to break up the band here. What's wrong with you?
We're apparently... first-person shooter is now anything that is played in first-person, so there you go.
Well, you know. Maybe it will be more of a shooter than Geist is. I can say that. You guys and you... I don't know. You're just genre purists. Yeah.
I'm not even a purist. I'm just saying you should play something that's actually where you actually shoot at people. Shoot at things. I mean, if you're going to say I'm going to play like, you know, an FPS and you play Portal, I would say, well, it's
I do not consider Portal or Metroid Prime to be first-person shooters. And you guys on Twitter told me like, "Oh, like you don't like first-person shooters? What about Portal 2?"
I didn't fucking say
that. I'm talking about Johnny and John. Well, but, I dismissed them. I said, "Well, those are not first-person shooters. Geist, I think, is way closer."
But then you play Geist, so I don't understand that. Like, play like Halo or Call of Duty or something like that, and
I will play whatever
I
have.
I'd be curious on my
shelves.
Remember,
on your shelves.
I'm not saying.
I mean. Jesus.
Dude, I'm just saying, like, if I'm curious, I am legitimately curious to hear your thoughts on recent first-person shooters, not a sort of first-person adventure that was released in, like, fucking 98.
Yeah, sure. Well,
1998? John, what the...
It was 2005. It was 10 years ago.
When you're as old as John, like, the past is just a big blur.
It was an exaggeration to prove my point, James. That's what it was.
Well, I might finish up this month with an actual recent-ish first-person shooter that I'm actually interested in. So
Halo 2.
It's not all trolling.
Remember, every game can be called a parlor game if you can't figure out the genre.
I mean, you have a PS3, don't you, Guy?
I do.
There must be something on PS3 that's recent.
Haze.
Yeah. we'll play. We'll see in the next few weeks.
Haze, also known as Time Splitters 5.
Yeah, exactly. It's.
Let's move on.
Yes.
I'm gonna race through a medley here, a very quick medley. So I have played the most this past week. I played mostly Elliot Quest, which is amazing. I know I was really positive on it the last time I talked about it. I'm more positive now that I've played more of it. I really, 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 really like this game. And it's hitting me in the special place the way that La Mulana did.
Ow.
And if you remember, that game ended up on my top five of the year. Now, mm-hmm. You could argue it was a weak year. It was like, you know, it was like 2011 on Wii. So not the most competitive crop of game releases probably that year, but La Mulana is really good. And Elliot Quest is similarly obtuse and nasty and challenging and extremely rewarding when you kind of overcome a hump and you beat a difficult boss or you find your way into a new area. It's very, very exciting when that happens. So I'm really high on it. And, I might talk about it a little more in depth when I beat it, which at this point looks like it's not too far off. So stay tuned there. But yeah, Elliot Quest it's some good stuff. If you have a high tolerance for pain and if you're very persistent and you like really hard games, I think you should check it out. I finished Majora's Mask 3D. If you remember the weekend that it came out along with the new 3DS system, I played through about half of that game in one weekend, and then I kind of didn't touch it for a while, and then like very slowly kind of churned through the rest of it. So I finally made it through the Stone Temple last weekend, and then, you know, the final boss fight after that is pretty short. Doesn't take that long to get through. So I just went ahead and did that. This was the main reason I wanted to talk about this, other than sort of patting myself on the back for beating a long game. And I sort of told myself I had to finish Majora before I could start Twilight Princess. So I kind of made it a priority. But, the main reason I wanted to bring it up is that this is the first time I've beaten Majora's Mask without the Fierce Deity Mask, without turning into Oni Link. And I was concerned that it was going to be really hard because I remember people talking about that last battle against Majora's Mask itself being really difficult if you did not get the Fierce Deity Mask. And the first time I played it back on N64, I went through every single side quest and, you know, painstakingly and did all that stuff and got that mask. And when you do that, as it turns out, the final boss becomes a complete joke and it's over in about 30 seconds. I think it takes longer to watch the transformation cutscenes as it goes from one form to another than it does to actually defeat it each time. But it really wasn't that much harder without it, I have to say. And I only had one row of heart containers. Like I didn't mill around and spend a whole bunch of time doing side quests this time. I kind of made a fairly clean, straightforward run through the game. I was mainly interested in getting through the dungeons and just checking out the main story of it. And, I don't know if they made it a little bit easier maybe in the 3DS version, but, it really wasn't that difficult. I mainly used my shield a lot. I did have the Great Fairy Sword. So maybe I should throw that caveat out there. I did get all the fairies in all four dungeons just because I think you haven't really seen all those dungeons if you didn't get the fairies. So I did that and I did use that sword, but, I guess all I really needed was arrows and a sword and a shield to beat that boss.
Yeah.
It's not terribly complicated. It's not even as involved as, say, you know, the end of Ocarina when you have to reflect the shots back at Ganondorf and do all that stuff. Or some of the, you know, Twilight Princess is pretty complicated. We'll get into that whole sequence in a few weeks. Skyward Sword is a whole different bizarro animal where you end up having a kind of like solid snake versus liquid snake fist fight duel up in the clouds or some shit from my vague recollection of it. But Majora's Mask, final battle was fairly straightforward, really. It just kind of like, you know, make it dizzy with an arrow and then...
Yeah, it's not exciting.
No, I was kind of disappointed. It was like, it almost makes me wish I'd gotten the Oni Link transformation because at least then you're interesting. You know, it's the only place in the game you can use that mask. And it's pretty fun to do so. But yeah, the boss itself really isn't that great, but, I'm really glad that I got this on 3DS. It was nice to play it through, and it was a much better experience than a couple years ago when we did Majora for Retroactive. I played through it on the Wii Virtual Console, and that was not a great experience. Among other things, you know, you have to use the ocarina so much, especially towards the end of the game at the Stone Temple, and playing those songs when, like, the C button prompts on the screen don't match up to the joystick or whatever you're using on your controller for Virtual Console, that stuff becomes very tedious. And a lot of those sequences, they smoothed out and trimmed up and made a lot more efficient on the 3DS version by, you know, use of the touch screen and various animations and little things are improved, and placement of certain little things has just been cleaned up a lot. It's all very subtle. I mean, the Majora's Mask remake, you know, as much as they talked about kind of making it easier for people and making it a little bit friendlier, I don't think it's drastically different. I mean, when you play through it, it's not like the Bomber's Notebook looks a little different. A couple things are in different places, like the bank. But by and large, it doesn't feel dramatically different. I think it's really just a lot of very smart, very small little tweaks to help people get through areas where a lot of people got stuck or gave up. And you can tell they really took their time with it, and they were very thoughtful about it. And that's a good looking game, and I definitely enjoyed playing through it quite a bit. But it made me kind of ready for a new Zelda, something different. So it'll be a while, I guess, yeah, for that.
I'm probably never going back to Majora's Mask. I really didn't enjoy it, but I do want to revisit Skyward Sword. And someone in the comments on NeoGAF made me discover the existence of patches if you have a hacked Wii to get rid of all the stuff that annoys in Skyward Sword, except maybe, you know, like very, very big stuff like the structure. But yeah, like all the messages that Fi gives, you know, helpful quote unquote messages, and the long tutorials, and the messages that repeat every time you pick up something, you can make that all go away. So I don't know, that might be the new quote unquote Zelda that I revisit soon.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear if you have a different experience with it playing through it again. All right. Well, one other very quick thing I'll mention is that I did play more Box Boy, which I had barely touched last week when we recorded the show. It had just come out earlier that day, and I hadn't had any real time with it. I've played a couple more hours of it now, and I'm enjoying it. I would say that I don't feel like there's a whole lot to it. There's a lot of content there, but I'm in like world 7 now, and it feels like the things I'm doing really aren't that different than they were in the first couple worlds. So I don't know how much variety there is. Certainly visually, there's almost no variety. So you have to really be into that art style, because it's kind of a long game, I think. And there's, it just doesn't, it's so limited in the way it's presented that it doesn't have a whole lot it can do to kind of shake things up. So I think it's, you know, it's got some drawbacks, to the simple presentation, but, it's a neat little game. The music is really good. That's probably one of my favorite things about it, actually, but it's a neat little game. And there really is a lot of stuff to unlock. There's a shop in the game where you can, spend the little tokens, the diamond or the crowns. You collect crowns, but then you get diamonds when you beat the level, and you can spend those on, you can unlock bonus stages and hint books and different costumes for your character. So it's a neat little thing. It's like $5. I don't know that it's for everybody, but I definitely think you would like it, Guillaume. And I'm planning on continuing to play it, but it's not burning up the streets or anything, you know.
Right.
But it's good.
We've been so like under an avalanche of Club Nintendo giveaways, and I want to play through that before I buy any more eShop titles.
More on that later. But let's wrap up new business with what James has been playing.
Yeah, so I've been on cleanup mode for most of this week. So clearing up things like Soul Nomad and the fantasticness that we talked about last week. A couple other games I've been trying to just sort of get off the table. And so I went to just have something to talk about this week, and because of some news that came out at the same time, I went ahead and got into the Inazuma 11 3DS eShop game that I bought a while ago. Just because
the one that's like a port of the DS game.
Well, yes, it is. That is a port of the DS games, is my understanding. It's in Japan. It was released as Inazuma 1-2-3, I think, which it implies the first three games. And this is a very slapdash port of these games. Like everything looks like a DS game except for the top screen, which they have now stretched to 16:9 and made the map 3D because a two-dimensional map being 3D is super helpful. videos are actually letterboxed on the bottom screen of the 3DS because of the resolution difference. It's fucking crazy. But the thing that's actually most – so I talked about this game about 3 years ago now on the show because when Carly came over from Europe, she basically brought over copies of this game. She brought over an copy of this game, which then led to a bunch of us buying the game because we played a little bit of it. Like, this soccer RPG is really freaking stupid. And then there was a great import rush of this game from Europe. I think 4 or 5 staff members had. This game was also weird because it came out in Europe. It was shipped to the UK, but then the UK release got canceled for a while because the TV show didn't go on the air. So people in the UK were importing UK copies from France. It was, the whole thing was just a goofy mess. I bought mine from Guernsey where it did come out, even though it's a British Crown dependency.
Guernsey, isn't that an island?
It's an island. Yeah, I bought mine from Guernsey.
That is so ridiculous.
It's an island under the control. It's not like, part of the UK, but it's part of the Crown.
Bought mine from American Samoa.
Yeah, that's essentially what the equivalent of it is. Yeah. I mean, it was fucking weird.
That's pretty great.
So the series never came out in the US that I know of because it's about soccer. And this is America, and we have good sports.
And yeah, we hate soccer and anything that's affiliated with it.
We have good sports. Yep. So I guess it's finally coming out here because it's got a whole new dub with Americans that don't sound like children, which is good. But if you don't know what this series is about, it's essentially it's a JRPG where you play as a middle school soccer club in totally not Japan. Hey, everybody, have a seat around the heated table. Like it's the weird it's like the crap that happens in Ace Attorney games to 11. But regardless, you basically play as a soccer club and you're recruiting members to play on these very JRPG style soccer matches where there's stat. It's crazy. You get random soccer battles. It's a weird game. But I was hoping I could just jump straight to 2 since I played 1 before. But no, it's all been looped together into 1. I don't know if they've sort of pared down content and sort of mashed them together as kind of like a remix, or if it's just all the content of 1, all the content of 2, all the content of 3, but it doesn't appear to be any mechanism for me to jump to 2. So I am relearning how to play Inazuma 11 1, which is just soccer, except not in any way, shape, or form. Like, you summon fireballs when you kick the ball. It's just, it's dumb, goofy garbage. But I enjoy it. It's a fun game. It's just really silly. So the reason I actually flipped to this one, like I said, one thing that happens when you're on the show is you don't have time to finish games. Some weeks you just have to grab something real fast because you're trying to finish other stuff, is that Level 5 had their annual announcements of games they were making, and this is a Level 5 owned franchise. They own the series, they own the TV show rights, they own the toy, whatever. And they made some announcements, and they aren't good. They announced officially, even though we knew it was coming, that Nintendo would be handling the localization of Yo-Kai Watch in North America and Europe, which means Nintendo will now have two series that are effective three because they have Fossil Fighters, three series that are effectively Pokemon under their belt. they also announced they're making Yo-Kai Watch 3, which is a 3DS game, which is set in the U.S., which tells you they have a lot of faith that this franchise will take hold in foreign markets.
Or maybe they think kids in Japan would be interested in the U.S.
I don't think it makes a fucking difference because that game's going to sell a trillion copies in Japan anyway.
Right.
But then they went and did
I look forward to their weird version of the – you remember Ni No Kuni, I think, took place in the U.S. as well, in the real world.
And yeah.
That was a bizarre version of America through Studio Ghibli's eyes.
Ni No Kuni is a weird game in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But the other stuff they announced is a little bit more disheartening. They announced two cell phone games. One is a so-called sequel to Fantasy Life. I think they should have called it Fantasy Life 2. And it focuses much more heavily on city building. Oh, so this
well,
is this.
We've heard that Fantasy Live did not sell very well.
No, it didn't. But it's still depressing that they've went and gone and made, you know, mobilized a franchise that had potential to be good. I personally didn't enjoy it very much, but I know Guillaume did. And
it was okay. Yeah.
So you think, oh, that's a real bummer. But then the other game, which we had seen once before, but it had gone away and I'd hoped it had died, was a game they called Layton 7. Now, the immediate reaction, it's a card game. It is a literal ass card game. Now, the immediate reaction people had was, oh my god, the seventh Layton game is this? And, yeah, well, so a clarification has come out since then. So I, just to make everybody feel a little bit better, is that it's not referencing the fact that it's the seventh Layton game, although it just happened to be the seventh Layton game. It's referencing the fact that there are seven characters represented in the cards. This is the seven Layton characters, apparently.
Oh, that makes it okay. Whew.
No, it doesn't.
I can't really name you more than two, really.
I could name you probably 15, 20. I'm way too into that series.
So it's like the Magnificent Seven. Or Ocean's yeah. Seven, something like that.
Yes.
Ocean's Seven.
Ocean's Seven, John, yes.
Classic. Or maybe Fast and Furious Seven.
It's just Furious Seven. But so maybe this isn't – maybe they still have plans for making a game, a real Layton game. But I think this does sort of posit a problem for Nintendo going forward, because this is one of their most reliable Japanese developers putting out hits on their platform.
Yeah.
And they only announced one 3DS game, and it's Yo-Kai Watch, the game they will keep making until it stops selling, and that may never happen. It comes to the point of how does Nintendo continue to get publishers involved when you can make these incredibly low-risk mobile games that maybe you don't make as much money on, or maybe you don't generate as much revenue on them, but the all-in cost of making a Layton game would have been very high because there's incredibly high production value. There's a lot of, you know, just game mechanics. You have to make all those puzzles. You have to make all the art. You have to make all the music. You have to put together this story. There's a lot of voice acting. Those games have very high cost. A card game? Pff, whatever. Mm-hmm. Cheapo town. And it would be disheartening if that's the way they're going to send this franchise out. I mean, I know they said that they were done with Layton after the last Layton game, and they did leave him in a place where it would be satisfying to sort of step away and go, okay, Layton's and Luke's adventures are finished. But that still leaves them the option to do something else with it that's not a card game on cell phones. And that really is darkest timeline stuff for me personally. So here's hoping that Level 5 still has a soul, but this feels pretty soulless. And disheartening, to say the least.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge... I wasn't filled with warm and fuzzy feelings when I saw this announcement.
No.
I don't see anything about 3DS, and Level 5 doesn't really seem to care about that. So,
well, only for Yo-Kai Watch, which they just care about that cold, hard Skrilla. We were making jokes about having stacks to the ceiling. Yo-Kai Watch has stacks to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that Level 5 put together has opened a European and North American publishing arms and still is passing on any form of Yo-Kai Watch publication, either the TV show, the toys, the games in those regions. And they're punting the TV show to one company, the toys to another. I think Hasbro has the toys and Nintendo's getting the games. It's like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
I don't know, it's very sad because this is a publisher that I have a lot of respect for. They've made a lot of games that I really care about that I think are in some cases almost underappreciated games. Like, but they have a real artistry for creating, you know, the big high production value in-depth world. So it's a shame to see them make these games that don't have that. I mean, like Layton Brothers Mystery Room, it just lacks magic when you play that game. There's just nothing there. It feels, it's fine, it's functionally fine, there's just no, I don't know how to describe it, it's just, there's something missing, and without getting into like, you know, sort of amorphous terms, like it doesn't have a soul or stuff like that.
Now, James, do you mean to tell me that a large traditional Japanese game developer / publisher is running out of creative juices?
Or they've decided that creative juices cost too much money.
Mm.
Like, I don't think they're. I earnestly believe the staff at Level 5 is incredibly talented individuals who could make who could continue to produce these inventive games. Some of them don't land quite right. I mean, I've spoken about my problems with both Fantasy Life and Ni No Kuni. But they're certainly not lacking for invention and, you know, world building and just artistry.
No, but I mean, Fantasy Life was announced 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh,
I mean,
more
it's
than
been
that.
A while, and more, that you know, and
more than that, yeah.
I just the way things are trending, I just wonder if we're going to start hearing about, you know, well-regarded developers from Level 5 jumping ship and going indie, the way you have from Konami and Capcom,
or being hired by somebody who's still making those games.
Well, in Japan, there really aren't many companies left other than Nintendo.
That's sort of, I mean, and hell, if I was Nintendo and I heard somebody was even thinking about jumping ship, hey, I got an office for you. We'll hire whatever team you want. We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
But it is somewhat sad. So in honor of this, I have officially decided that I'm going to throw my Smash Brothers lot in with Leighton as my recommended character.
Okay.
Because I think that would be a fitting tribute to what a game that I'm not going to acknowledge exists in the end of the Leighton franchise. And B, I think that would be I am thrilled to think of what they would come up with for his final Smash. Like, just what that would look like. Excites me.
James, that's a good segue into Listener Mail, where we're going to be talking more about Smash Brothers characters that we would vote for in the fighter ballot. So,
yep.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to do Listener Mail.
It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. Hey, John, you feeling better this week?
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better, James. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I was a little worried last week. I was worried maybe some story of the seasons had gotten to you. You sounded a little off.
No, I mean, you know, that's the thing. When I get sick like that, you know what? I get truthful. That's the thing.
You get truthful? Yeah.
I get truthful. I start really spitting the truth. You know what I mean?
A little congested sounding, too. It was
yeah.
I was a little worried. You weren't feeling so hot.
Yeah, it kind of messed with my voice a little bit. But, you know, I'm all right. I'm much better now.
Good. Because we have a review!
All right.
We probably have more, but we have a review! And it's of Etrian Mystery Dungeon by Becky. Do you like Etrian Odyssey? Do you like Mystery Dungeon games? If the answer to both of these questions is a resounding yes, like it is for me. Yeah, because I love Mystery Dungeon games.
Just read the script.
Have a review for you? Becky takes on this dungeon crawler and tells us if we should play it or pub crawl instead.
Probably pub crawl.
I'm already drunk, so that's probably not going to work out. Mm-hmm. Speaking of already drunk, we have the NWR Super Smash Brothers Tournament Week 3. It's good versus evil, the forces of light versus the forces of darkness, angels versus demons, in other words, RFN versus Mousers. Watch John Lindemann disgrace Justin Berube in what can only be called a Clash of the Titans.
Indeed.
I'm going to go ahead and... Go ahead.
I disgraced him. His honor was besmirched.
I will say that it is truly light versus darkness, because these assholes are playing on essentially Wrecking Crew with nothing going on the Omega stage with no items. This is truly not what Sakurai intended with this game.
Nope.
As proved by the fact Gus Bellows exist.
Not at all. Not at all. That's exactly it. Okay. All right. And we have a review of Fossil Fighters Frontier by Addison Webb. I'll just come out and say it.
Say it, John.
James. Addison wants to be your paleo pal.
I'm not comfortable with this.
He's too shy to admit it, but that's the gist of his review. That's actually a total lie, but I like the phrase paleo pal, so I rolled with it. Anyway, see what he has to say about this Pokemon Light RPG.
Is that kind of like paleo diet?
Kind of, yeah.
You can only have friends that are nuts and berries?
You only eat Vivisaurs.
That's delicious. It.
Yeah. Okay. And we also have another review, Affordable Space Adventures by... the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, Don Koopman. Could Don be ditching his Kusage past? It's like we don't even know him anymore. This week he reviews a game that is certainly better than the monorail simulator he reviewed last week.
Vertical suspension simulator.
Call it what you will. It was an atrocity. See how this co-op puzzler fares when it's put through the Koopman Kusage filter.
All this and more filters. I don't know. John didn't give anything to work with this time. All this and more filters are available to you at AttenderWorldReport.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Let's see, John, could you read the first email, please?
Absolutely, Johnny. Clayton writes, can you give your thoughts on the final set of rewards for Gold and Platinum Club Nintendo members, like you did with the normal coin rewards a few weeks back?
What is each one of us picking for our reward, whatever level that you managed to achieve?
Right. Well, several of the games I already owned, but I think that the game I would recommend is the one that I picked, and it's Animal Crossing New Leaf, because I think it's perfectly suited for having on the SD card all the time. It's a game that you want to have on hand when you've got your 3DS, when you just want to chill out, and I've started playing it over the past few days. I'm going to talk more about it.
Had you not played it before?
Not this version. I played the GameCube version, and I played a little bit of the DS one and got sick of that really quickly. And that's kind of why I stayed away from New Leaf until now.
Well, after your reaction to Tomodachi Life, I feel like New Leaf is definitely a game that you should be checking out.
Right. Well, I think that more has changed in New Leaf than I expected. I remember just Wild World to be very, very, very similar to the GameCube game, to the point where I didn't see the point of playing that again, right?
Yeah.
But New Leaf, also, I'm playing in a different way. Karen also has a code, and so we can visit each other's towns, and that's a new experience. Like, I didn't do that in the GameCube.
Did you both get Platinum?
No, well, I'll talk about that in the next few weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I took Mario Golf World Tour, the 3DS game that Guillaume has been playing recently, and came out about a year ago now. I haven't even booted it up yet, but my thought process was that it was the most desirable and highest value to me item on the list that I did not already own. And most of the good rewards, like the things that you clearly look at and be like, oh, wow, I can't believe they made that one of the rewards. Most of those I already had, including Animal Crossing, which I don't even like that much. So, you know, World Tour, I guess my feeling on it was, well, I'll probably play that more than I'll play any of these other things. And I don't know how much that will be. It depends on how much it hooks me, you know. But I was kind of, you know, middling on the whole selection. And it comes down to, as I've said before and I said on Twitter, hey, I appreciate getting a game here. You know, I struggled with that website for many hours in order to get here. So I'm not going to call it free. I think I put in my time to get this game, but I do appreciate it. I appreciate not having to spend money on it. But maybe this is my privileged adult, employed adult perspective here, but money isn't really the thing that keeps me from getting most video games. So if there's a game that I really, really want to play, I'll just buy it. So that kind of is where my issue with the Club Nintendo rewards kind of comes, you know, that's where it comes from a lot of times. It's like, well, if you're offering me something that I didn't really think was worth the money in the first place, but now I can get it for not paying that money, okay, maybe you make that decision a little bit easier for me, but I still kind of don't want to play it that badly, because if I did, I would have bought it in the first place. I mean,
right.
I got Platinum. I'm not opposed to buying video games. I bought a whole bunch of them to get to this point. So I guess my feeling on the whole, you know, it's a moot point now because it's all going away, but my feeling on Gold and Platinum, especially this year, the way to do it to me would have been to do something like give us access to one or two, for instance, Wii games that are coming to Wii U that aren't available yet. Or really to anything. So let me retract that. Let me just say, to something, if they gave us something that's not coming out for like another month, for everybody else, so it doesn't even have to be anything that's like particularly valuable. I think Box Boy would have been a fine reward if that was coming out in May, for instance, for everyone else. Because if you give people something that they can't otherwise buy, then there's not really a way to place a value on it. In the normal context. And also there's no weird opportunity cost type of equation that people are doing in their heads, because this is something that the only way you can get it for now is through Club Nintendo. And I think it would work to Nintendo's favor in getting something out there and letting people talk about it and build up some word of mouth for it and, you know, kind of put something out there that people, they don't know if they're going to like it or not, you know. But when you put out games that are over a year old that I've had the whole last 12 months to buy, I just, you know, again, I'm glad to get this game that I otherwise would not have paid money for, but like, I'm not super excited about it because I didn't really want the game that much in the first place. So then again, it could turn out to be my favorite game ever. I haven't even started playing it yet. But that's sort of my thought process on the whole thing.
So I'm in a kind of a bad spot here because I only have gold because I couldn't get my last 100 points into the website, which is frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating. Yeah. So I would have easily cleared the platinum hurdle, but I don't get it because the website sucked. So that being said, when I look at the platinum list, every game I want, I already own.
Okay.
Every game I have any desire to play, I mean, maybe I would have bought NES Remix 2.
That is a really good NES Remix.
But I have more likely just bought Ultimate NES Remix and been done with it.
Right.
However, with gold, the situation is considerably more dire. My dislike for Pushmo/Crashmo is pretty well established. I just don't think those games are challenging in even the most remote sense. I have no desire to play them. Freaky Forms I somehow ended up with because of Nintendo World Report, which is just a nightmare I wasn't ready to have.
Freaky Forms is incredible.
So, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's kind of a sad place.
Well, my pick for gold would be Crashmo. It's just, I think it's superior to Pushmo, and yeah, a really enjoyable little puzzle game. I would prefer that over Pushmo World or the first Pushmo for sure.
I was basically drinking turpentine by the time I got halfway through Pushmo, so I really want nothing to do with that series.
I think that Crashmo really changes up the gameplay enough to make it a whole different
game. It's a lot harder.
The challenge is fair to me.
Me and my measly 600 points will likely pick up New Super Mario Bros. 2 for 3DS.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you don't already have it, that's a pretty good choice.
Isn't that a platinum only?
It's 600 points, so...
Oh, we're talking about the gold platinum rewards, John.
Yeah, no.
But you didn't make either, did you?
No, I didn't make either of those.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because John hates Nintendo, by the way.
Only sometimes.
He's just got so many Mario games on the shelf that
That's right.
Thousands, my friend.
Millions of them.
Yep.
For a game that I would tell people to stay away from, Yoshi's New Island, I picked that up when it was on sale a few months ago, and it's only, I don't know, it's just like the first Yoshi's Island, but done way, way worse.
But new.
And, not quite.
It's in the name, Guillaume. It's new.
They really emphasize... I don't know. Like, I think if you just play it, the level straight through, it's probably bearable. But if you're trying to collect everything, and I think that Yoshi's Island as a series, like, that's what they encourage. That's kind of the whole point. They don't do the whole collect-a-ton thing very well. And there's several instances where they basically block you from going back, like, as soon as you make one extra step that you shouldn't make. Like, they have a thing where you need this boulder that you're rolling to collect these things, but you don't know that they're even there. Like, there's kind of a false wall there. And, if you push that boulder a little bit too much, it goes down an incline and you can push it back up. And, you know, by the time you realize that you needed it, it's too late. Like, there's lots, they constantly trick you. So you constantly have to play the level several times, and the levels themselves, they're not interesting enough to warrant playing through them several times. So it was a huge disappointment.
All right. Well, Guillaume, could you please read the next email?
Sure. Andy writes, since Nintendo opened the poll for new Smash characters, I'd like to hear which fighters you think we could expect to join the fight and which ones you are hoping for. Waluigi, Ridley, Cranky. I'd love to see Doshin, but I guess it's rather unlikely. Phil Spencer from Microsoft even showed his interest in seeing Banjo in the game. Would love to hear your thoughts.
What, Project Spark's not working out for him?
Yeah, no, of course Microsoft is trying to use that for their publicity.
Yeah, and I want to note that we got at least three emails on this topic of the Smash ballot. And,
oh, yeah.
And what characters we think could end up in there. So thank you also to Eric and Alexander.
Yeah.
I just picked the shortest one, basically.
I don't remember whose it was, but somebody else asked, do you think Nintendo actually cares what the vote is, or are they just whittling down a list they already have?
We talked about that last week.
Yeah,
I think essentially it's a sham. Like, they've already picked a character, and
that would be my
nothing
guess.
We vote for is influencing anything at all.
Yeah, to think they would actually make a character complete from scratch is a pipe dream.
Yeah, I think it's just a way to get people to talk about Smash, and it's working. My tweet stream is just my tweet feed is just full of people who are like, "Hey, have the reckless." Reckless Swingman, from the Wii warning messages from before games. I think that's probably my favorite, like, even if it's a really joke, good. I think it's my favorite choice. I would play as that for sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Wii Fit Trainer level of trolling, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, it's good.
I've already thrown my lot in on the Layton, but that's third parties actually happening. That might be sort of the exception of one that they might actually pull. Mm. I mean, the ones I've thought through, like, they're not going to do Waluigi because Nintendo apparently wants him dead. The only people who care are Hudson, or basically, like, what's the word for describing them? Hudson refugees.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good, I like that.
So, my favorite is probably Waluigi. I think Tingle would be fun too, but I feel like Waluigi is a better option. And
yeah,
Waluigi is deserving.
He's underrepresented, and Tingle has been already used as a joke in Hyrule Warriors. So
a DLC joke.
Yeah, DLC playable character. Waluigi's never really been playable outside of sports games. Which is where he's from originally. I guess Mario Party. But you know, the only issue I see with Waluigi, other than the fact that he doesn't have a really strong identity because he's never had his own game, is that he is an assist trophy in Smash Brothers for Wii U. Now, he's kind of an awful assist trophy, so I could see them maybe, like, if they did add him as a playable character, I could see them maybe just taking out that assist trophy and just removing that from the game.
Or just making it so it won't come up when he's in the game.
So what does he do as an assist trophy? I don't think I've seen him.
He doesn't do very much. I think he just kind of runs around and hits people or something.
Yeah, he's one of those.
It's not terribly memorable.
Well, since he's from the sports games, you could easily have him swing rackets and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think he would have to have a tennis racket since that was his debut in Mario Tennis on N64.
Right.
I think this would be a chance to actually kind of develop him as a character and, you know, introduce a couple new things. Other than that, Banjo would be cool. I know some people have been talking up Goku, which would be kind of interesting. Of course, Goku's been in lots of fighting games, Dragon Ball Z games.
I treat that as another joke character.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like they do want it to be a video game character specifically.
Yes, which it should be.
They probably won't go with, you know, Luke Skywalker or, you know, anything
that. Dumb suggestions you've come up with. I kind of want it to be from something more modern. Like, I want it to be something that maybe hasn't had a chance to become, like, so Nintendo can say, look, we're still creating new identities, new characters. And in that respect. And
Mallow from Pushmo, your favorite series.
That fucking piece of garbage.
You could have such great Pushmo World stages for Smash Brothers.
Well, that'd be great. It'd be the first time a Pushmo World stage has ever been good. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the Inklings is almost a given at this point. As a cross-promotional tool. And also because I predicted that would make me really happy. And I would instantly take the most insane prediction and be right. That'd be cool.
You know, I could see one mark against that might be that the engine might have trouble handling all the ink being residual on the stage. You know, like, for that character to work, you'd kind of want to have, if you think about it, if you're going to transport the ability to turn into the squid and, like, basically swim through the ink after you shoot it and lay it down on the stage. That'd be really cool in a Smash Brothers stage. But that is a layer of interactivity with the stage and with the environment that they'd have to program in from scratch. I feel like that'd be an especially difficult implementation.
You'd have to flub it because you couldn't – effectively, you would have situations with like 75 meters where they could have covered the whole thing. It'd be easier if you just did it, basically just said, yeah, they leave an ink trail when they go underground, but they can only go underground for really limited periods of time or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, you get and then you just sort of have them shoot ink. It's kind of in a flood sort of way.
Right, right.
You could cobble it together from other characters, I suppose. But it would be a interesting aesthetic from an aesthetic standpoint because those characters are so different looking than anything else.
Yeah, that's true. And they do seem to enjoy that.
Yeah.
Especially in this newest version.
And when those characters were first announced, we were like, wow, these don't look like Nintendo designs.
Right, right. Yeah, I do think the instruction manual guy would be... that's a very Sakurai move. I mean, I seriously doubt that they've ever thought of doing that before. But
I bet Sakurai has.
It would fit into Smash Brothers so beautifully.
I think there had been enough votes for that to... Like, if they weren't aware of it before, they are aware of it now.
There's some support for Groose from Skyward Sword, but I feel like he's just not a well-known character.
I did a full 180 on Groose. I'm all in on Groose at this point, because it's such a dumb fucking character.
Yeah,
I don't really think that's going to happen.
No, it's still not going to happen, but I did a total 180 on how I feel about him as a character.
Yeah, I feel like Geno is a non-starter. I know people like to talk about Geno from Super Mario RPG, but it's not even clear whether Nintendo has the rights to that character, and just doesn't seem likely to me.
I go back to my Bayonetta.
I could see Bayonetta would be really awesome.
They could never, ever do it.
I think they could. I think they could find a way to do Bayonetta.
They would have to desexualize the hell out of her, though.
Hmm. Well... It's all in the animation, you know.
That is a true statement.
Yeah,
I mean, I got one for you. Yeah? Raymond Bryce from Disaster Day of Crisis.
Oh yeah, yes, yes, yes.
To be honest, if I was naive enough to think he had any chance in hell of happening, I think I would vote for Firebrand from Demon's Crest.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
But it's just, it can't happen. Like, it would be an interesting character, like all those transformations and stuff, but...
How about Alucard?
Well, I guess he has appeared in a bunch of... He has appeared in Nintendo games.
Hmm. And he's been in a fighting game, if you remember Castlevania Judgment.
You know what? You know, I do remember Castlevania Judgment. Thank you. No.
And with that, I think we should move on.
Yes, but, please.
Let's see, I guess I have the next email. Pablo writes, question, what are your favorite rock bands and how would you make a game with them as the central concept? Would you make a shooter where you shoot music CDs like in that Aerosmith game? Maybe take Def Jam Fight for New York's fighting mechanics and mix them with hair metal rockers from the 80s, or perhaps a Mad World style beat 'em up with Slipknot members. John, we were going to do this last week, but we held it over for when John could come back. And
man, really I don't know.
And response to the email he wrote, yes.
See, Def Jam Fight for New York, I still have yet to play that. That's one that I should actually invest $5
in. You should absolutely spend $5 to play that game.
I think Vendetta is considered the better, the sequel.
They're both Aki Engine games.
They're pretty legit from what I hear.
You know what's up.
Yeah, I know what's up. I don't know. I mean, it's tough. It's like, I mean, my favorite rock bands, that's the thing. It's like, I like bands, but not all of them. I could see them in video games. Something not that they're one of my favorite bands, but something like Gwar, like having a Gwar video game would be amazing.
I'm surprised there isn't one. I mean, we did get.
Yeah, really.
Essentially,
how did they make it through the PS1 era without a Gwar video game?
because everyone who would make that game was busy making Kiss Psycho Circus on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I'm
the days of Wu Tang, whatever that was called, and Shaolin,
Shaolin Monk Warriors or whatever. Yeah, that game's amazing.
was a Wu-Tang fighting game on PS1. It never came out. They remade it.
No, it did. It was a game that wasn't completed, and then they added the Wu-Tang thing.
Yeah, the Wu-Tang Shaolin style.
Was that it? Yeah. So it did come out as Wu-Tang.
I think the game was just Shaolin style, and then they Wu-Tanged it up.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think it was also in the Power, because in Power Regions, it's called Wu-Tang Taste the Pain.
Taste the Pain. Huh. Well, John, I think one for you, this might be, all right, picture Furious 7 and,
Done.
and how it handles Paul Walker dying last year.
Yep.
And think of a Beastie Boys game where they use it as some kind of like tribute and send off for Ad Rock.
You mean MCA?
I mean MCA.
Yep.
No,
I'm an expert on Beastie Boys.
He doesn't, John. He doesn't.
I'm a true expert.
You'll find out about Ad Rock in a couple days.
Exactly. Ad Rock, Adam Horovitz of the Beastie Boys, was killed today by an aerospace engineer who said, and I quote, "This is for NASA." Yeah.
I meant for that to be semi-poignant.
I just wanted them to make a game about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could definitely, I mean, they're definitely a group that would lend themselves to being in a game. I don't know what. I could see them being in some sort of something like LucasArts kind of maniac, you know, kind of deal, like Day of the Tentacle Maniac Mansion kind of thing. I could see them being, you know, like some sort of bumbling kind of funny RPG sort of thing, like you know, or like some sort of South Park kind of ish sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? This is actually an interesting question because it makes you think about this, but then you realize that a lot of the worst ideas that you've already had have already been done. You know, I was thinking like, okay, well, you could
already
have, yeah, like you could have some sort of like Grand Theft Auto thing with Snoop Dogg, but that has actually already been done, hasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a 50 Cent game.
Yeah,
there were two 50 Cent games.
There is a video game.
Super well.
Yeah, there's a video game with Snoop Dogg, isn't there? That's kind of like Saints Row.
This Way of the Dog.
Am I completely off?
He was in True Crime. He was in one of the True Crime games.
Yeah, like those
true
kinds
crime
of games,
LA,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is very GTA like.
Yeah.
So okay, I have an answer prepared. Which you guys might groan about, but I actually think this would be kind of cute, and I think it would work. It would fit the goofy video game adaptation. So most people listening will know I'm a big fan of the band Phish, and since the 80s, they've had this weird kind of like stupid mythology that they've kind of written in and around a lot of their older songs. It's called Game Henge. It even has game in the title. And Game Henge is this fantasy world that they created where there's monsters and knights and magic birds and books that cure the world of evil and stuff like that.
Fucking drugs, man.
It's more like, you know how like Robert Plant would weave in a lot of Lord of the Rings references in Led Zeppelin songs?
Yep.
It's done in that. So there's a lot of songs that you don't even realize are related to this weird mythology until you listen to them a whole lot, you know, or someone has to tell you about it. So it's not always super overt in the lyrics or anything, but they've effectively, through probably 20 songs or so, they've kind of developed this, you know, kind of very loose story and these certain characters and things. And I think it would be fun to turn that into, to a video game. And it could be basically like a Zelda or an Adventure Time, you know, style, kind of like weird psychedelic adventure, fantasy adventure. And I think that could be kind of cute. I could see the band getting into that too. They're about the right age to, you know, have like, they were like adults in the 80s, but, you know, they probably were into stuff like Zelda back then. So I think that would be kind of fun.
I kind of think that at this point, you know, in the post-Brutal Legend world, it's, you know, we don't really need anything.
We all live in the post-Brutal Legend world.
Brutal Legend actually is a good template for what I was just talking about, actually. Minus the strategy crap.
Exactly. Yeah, the game was not perfectly executed, but I think that the world it built, Kind of did the job, like taking the piss out of like death metal cover art and mythologies and stuff like that. I think it did a good job. It was funny, and I don't really wish for anything more.
It's also kind of a satire of that music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is that's how I would want it to be handled. You know.
Yeah, I mean, most of the music I listen to would be classified under the rock headline is mostly kind of bluesier stuff. So there's not really much you can do there because it's mostly just. It's either just sad or just real mellowish stuff. So there's not really an open opportunity there. But to go back to John's point, man, why can't we just get just a really random band and then just throw Sam Max Hits the Road on it and be done? Like just Korn Hits the Road. Done. We're out. Everybody's finished.
Korn Hits the Road.
We're done. Yeah. Problem solved.
I mean, there has to be a Limp Bizkit game. There has to be a Limp Bizkit game out there.
I feel like there,
you know what?
That probably exists.
If there's a Wu-Tang one, I mean,
Sum 41.
I was thinking the guys who dress up as clowns. I'm blanking on what it is now.
Slipknot.
Yeah, there's gotta be. They have.
No, that's Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah.
Who. I think they also have like a fairly complicated mythology behind some of their songs, similar to Fish. There's some odd parallels between those two bands.
They've got to have a video game.
They don't seem to have that much in common, but
they've got to have one. It's impossible. There's not an ICP game.
Yeah.
Again, I feel like PS1 era would have been
absolutely
just the right time and the right platform.
Oh no, they had that backyard wrestling game. That was it.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Oh,
it's done. Ben Broughton.
Why do I
know that?
That's the thing. I don't know, James. That's another one. That's one for the archives. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of this crazy shit. That's the thing. That's why this question is kind of funny, because it's actually not really that outlandish a question, because all the shit's kind of already happened.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, because we lived through the era that was essentially the PlayStation through the death of the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of what we were talking about during the break. Where like games are too expensive now. Games are too fucking cheap back then.
Yeah.
They needed to be way more expensive to be made.
Well, if you think about the way the indie revolution is going,
great.
It's working its way through a lot of the nostalgic trends, and I wonder at some point if we're going to get to the point that people making indie games who maybe have personal relationships with, you know, some of these pop culture icons or have access to them through Twitter or something like that, maybe they can say, "Look, Jackson Browne. No one's ever going to make a video game about you, but I will, you know, basically lend me your likeness for no money and I'll make this game. And if it turns out to be really great and a lot of people play it, you'll probably sell some extra records and it costs you nothing."
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the democratization of video game development could maybe allow this to happen. And it'd be very interesting.
Can we get a video game adaption of ICP's Big Money Hustlers? I mean, I feel like we'll just go full circle on just the chaos engine that is.
James, if you get really high and hold a controller while you watch it, you won't know the difference. Big Money Hustle. That is the Insane Clown Posse in the Wild West.
That's the ICP
wearing all the
movie.
Clown makeup and everything.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't watch it. Okay. Let's move on to.
I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah. All right, let's see. James, can you read the next email, please?
Secor writes, "It was recently announced that Splatoon would not support voice chat. I would like to hear the RFN crew's thoughts on this news, and in general, Nintendo's continued lack of support for online voice communication. It really should be a standard feature set to include voice chat compatibility in all online multiplayer Wii U games. It should be up to the consumer to choose whether to enable or disable such functionality. If all games were voice chat compatible, then concerned parents could administer the usage of such features with built-in Wii U parental controls. Parental controls exist for a reason, and apparently Nintendo doesn't even know they exist. Nintendo needs to realize that children are not the only consumer of their product, and when they continue to play parents, they continue to impact the adults."
Very so true.
Our
true.
Reaction to the news was, we had no shit. Because
we
called it on this show months ago.
I mean, it's disappointing and unsurprising. You know, I've never understood Nintendo's stance on voice chat.
But you say that, but it's in Smash Brothers. It's just not any good.
Yeah, they.
Yeah, it's in Mario Kart. I mean, it's not useful really because of the way that they've implemented it is so restrictive that if you actually want to chat with your friends, you're just going to hook up Skype anyway because
in
Mario Kart's ridiculous. Sometimes you get like 5 seconds to chat. You can't even like finish a sentence before it cuts you off and it goes on to the next thing.
It was really tempting to hang up the call just now. Just as you were saying.
I mean, why bother? You know?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like they would rather have sort of these half attempts at voice chat rather it's just so they can say that they do have it. Like that's the problem that I have. I mean, either you're all in or you're just don't even have it on your console. But it's like they're trying to compete without really trying to compete.
Yeah, like WeSpeak. You know, what half-hearted bullshit is that?
No, WeSpeak wasn't half-hearted. It was just insane.
It was
not a realistic attempt.
I did try to play Monster Hunter Tri multiplayer online with some people with WeSpeak, and
we did a lot of things.
It was the worst experience playing online that I've ever had. Much better to not even have WeSpeak around.
But John, when they ported that game to the Ultimate version on Wii U, couldn't you just use the gamepad to do voice chat all the time?
I think you could. I think so. Yeah.
But you can even plug a headset into the gamepad. I mean,
yeah, you can do that.
Can you get a headbanger?
Wii U is definitely, I mean, 3DS as well, I suppose, but the Wii U is really the most equipped system they've ever done to do voice chat, and yet almost nothing supports it.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty obvious that they don't mandate it at all.
Well, no. They're not even close to mandating it.
I don't think every
game needs to have voice chat.
Oh, absolutely not. But I think, that's the thing. Nintendo doesn't make it easy for companies to put voice chat in. I mean, the reason why voice chat is so prevalent, I mean, why it's standard is because Sony says, okay, here it is. You can use it. You know? And everybody expects it. You know,
it's not really my experience that voice chat is prevalent on Sony systems. Like, do they bundle the PS4 with a headset? I think that they sell it separately. Oh, really?
Nope.
Well, it wasn't the case with the PlayStation 3, and almost no one spoke.
It was a big mistake, but it was a decision that was made back in 2006, and it's a decade later, and Sony got wise, and it's a very cheap little one-sided headset that they stick in there, and I've mostly used it for Twitch streaming, but. It's great for that. It's nice to have it around. Now that I have my good isolating earphones that have a built-in inline microphone, I've been using that instead. But yeah, I mean, I don't use voice chat that much, quite frankly. The only game that I play online very much at all is Smash Brothers. And when I play Smash Brothers with my friends, I'm going to use Skype because chatting between matches on the gamepad microphone is not acceptable.
But that's the thing. But
that's
Johnny,
not
if
going to cut it.
But Johnny, if you and I played a co-op game on PS4, would we use voice chat?
Of course. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. There aren't many games on there that I would want to do that. But if there was one, then you and I would.
That's the whole point. I mean, with most Nintendo games, when you want to do it, it's not there, or it's so bad that you just want to avoid it.
Whenever I've played Destiny, you bet I've played with voice chat.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I didn't get that much into Destiny, but when I was playing it, of course I was using voice chat.
Yep.
Even with random people, because you need to communicate. You need to be like, hey, dude, you get that side, I'll get this side. I mean, like real basic stuff, but you don't want to be typing it in on the screen while you're trying to play the game.
Yeah.
You don't want to be using these preset commands that never quite say what you really need them to say, which is what Splatoon is doing, I suppose. You know, I mean, that was a good idea on Dreamcast with Phantasy Star Online, but it's freaking 2015. And yeah, I mean, everything C-Core said is correct. I mean, if the game has voice chat and you don't want to use it, then don't use it. If you don't want your kids using it, then turn it off in the parental controls. But everybody else who wants to use it should be able to use it. And especially in a game like Splatoon, where communicating really makes a big difference. And Nintendo has had, you know, now a year of experience demoing that game to the press and to the general public at events like PAX. And they've seen that when people play the game and they're on these teams, they need to shout at each other and they need to communicate in order to set up strategies and to play effectively. And I don't know how you attend an event like that and observe the people playing and then decide that the game doesn't need voice chat when you play it online. It's absurd.
Yeah, and also the fact that it's been crazy. Standard for 10 years.
To me, I don't care about voice chat all that much just because I guess I've never had an Xbox, so I've always had consoles that didn't have it, Sony and Nintendo. And, you know, I mentioned playing Left 4 Dead 2. I played it on Steam, and the Steam voice chat kind of sucks, so I used Skype anyway with my friends. But I think that the lack of voice chat in Splatoon is kind of secondary. I think the bigger problem is that we still can't quite message people, even though they are online or that we use, to tell them, hey, come play this game with me. You know, like there's no reliable way. System. Yeah, you can send them in some games, you can send them a message, but there's a very high chance that they're not going to notice it. Like their home button on their gamepad is going to flash and they're going to think, okay, like some bullshit from Nintendo, and they're not going to check what it is.
Yep.
So when I want to arrange a multiplayer game on the Wii U or the 3DS, I have to use Twitter. I have to use Skype. I have to use my phone to arrange the game. So when I'm at that point, I might as well use Skype or the phone to actually keep voice chatting during the game. So I think first they should fix the whole, like, you know, bringing people to you, telling your friends you're playing this game, and then maybe work on the voice chat.
Yeah.
Well, this is where their DNA thing could come into play.
Hopefully.
If you think about it, that thing lives on your phone. And it also, it ties in with your 3DS and your Wii U and your NX and your PC. So you can imagine that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, if you want to, you should be able to receive, alerts, maybe even messages from your friends. Heaven forbid that your friends can send you messages on your smart devices, or your game consoles. But, you know, it seems like that may be a way for them to really have a unified account system and a unified community across all the platforms that they're supporting, and let people you know, set up games with each other that way. And so I mean, this is something that, you know, we've talked about for a very long time. I know it's a pet topic of John's, you know, that Nintendo just they don't have the service infrastructure to enable this kind of deep communication integration. But it's weird because when you play on other platforms, you really do take it for granted. And even someone like me who really I don't play that many games online, period, on any platform. But when I do, I expect them to work. I expect them to be functional and easy to use. And Nintendo's are not. Especially when you play online in a Nintendo game. It's not that easy to set up. It ends up being a lot of extra steps. I have to bring a computer into the living room with me. To play Smash Bros.
It's an accessory. And it's a $1,000 accessory they sell alongside the Wii U.
More than that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. There's really no excuse for it. I don't think there's really any good rationalization for not including voice chat. I mean, you can say, well, maybe most people wouldn't use it. I don't know about that.
Like, I would use it every single time I played Splatoon, literally, because I would always be... Especially, and that's the sad thing about it for me, is because the one console that I would want to use voice chat for all the time, because I know so many people that play Nintendo consoles,
is PS4.
And like is Wii U. You know? I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, I don't really play any online games with anybody on PS4 or anybody on Xbox One. Occasionally I do, but very rarely. I mean, there's only a few people out there that I would actually play online
more
games
of a rando thing.
Meanwhile, for, you know, for Wii U, I mean, you guys, number one, everybody that likes this podcast and listens to it, follows me on Twitter and stuff. I mean, it's silly. And Nintendo just puts all these obstacles out there.
When we play online, we play with people who listen to the show all the time.
Yeah.
It's not hard to find us on these platforms. And we would like to be able
to talk to you. Sometimes we'll hear them come through between matches, but it sounds like they're reaching out to us from the Andromeda system. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah. And I mean, it's the same thing.
Older guys coming through
your
TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
creepy.
It's the same thing with Twitch streaming. Like, I wish Nintendo consoles had. I know it can't happen for hardware reasons or whatever bullshit Nintendo cooks up. But, I mean, this stuff, these consoles, they need to have this stuff, Nintendo.
Twitch streaming is really fun. It's a fun thing to do because the fact that you know people are watching you changes the way you play the game a little bit. The fact that you know they can hear you talking if you set up the voice chat or the live commentary that makes it different because it feels like you're kind of podcasting while you play the game.
Yeah.
And then on the PS4, at least, I don't know how the Xbox handles it, but on the PS4, you can also bring up a column on the side of the screen where it shows people's comments. And so people who are watching can type in and have a conversation back and forth with you. The same way if you were on the Twitch website, it has a chat room that goes along with you. It's just for your stream. It's yep. just for the people who are watching you play the game. And guess what? They're talking about what you're doing in the game. And they can give you hints. They can help you get through areas. They can ask
they can call
questions.
You a dick.
They can. Sure.
In real time.
But you can kick them out. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, you know, but that stuff is really fun. And I agree with you, John. Every time I do that stuff on my PS4, I think, man, this is really fun. But the one system I would really especially want to do this on, I can't. And that's the Nintendo
yep.
systems.
Yep. It's unfortunate.
You can still use Miiverse. I encourage you to use that more. I mean, it's not streaming, but
I think that's...
I've been... You know, to wash away the bad geist aftertaste, I played Super Mario World over the weekend, and I was posting a lot of... I was trying really hard to be funny, posted a lot of jokes, and Greg was yaying them, and that made my weekend. Made nice. Me feel like, yay, people care.
Yeah,
and Greg is awesome.
Miiverse is cool. I've been checking it a little more frequently since I got the new 3DS because it does load up in a reasonable time on there, and it's generally gotten faster and faster on Wii U as well after being kind of interminably slow in the early days. But it does seem like fewer people are using it nowadays.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo, you know, with the kind of poor experience in the early days of it just not running very well and not being integrated very well with the games that you're playing, I think they probably turned off a lot of people who checked it out and then decided that it wasn't
or they
worth
just forgot
the
it's
time
there
to mess with. Yeah, it doesn't call attention to itself, which could be a good thing, but a lot of the newer games really don't, you know, like New Super Mario Brothers U, it brought up those comments, and 3D World did it as well, where you could see what people are saying in Miiverse as you played through it, and not very many games lately are doing that. You know, Mario Kart 8 doesn't really have anything like that. Smash Brothers doesn't have... So we still don't even have the Miiverse stage in Smash Brothers. I don't know when that's coming. It wasn't even mentioned at the Direct. But it does feel like Nintendo's focus on Miiverse has really fallen away quite a bit over the last couple of years. And that's too bad, because I do think it's a cool thing. You know, it really is it's a nice asset that they have. And especially on Wii U, I think it sets that platform aside from the competition in a good way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wish it was implemented a little bit better, but at the core, sure. Miiverse is a good idea, and it's done pretty well, actually.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
it's nicely presented.
It's the only thing that's there. It should be supplemental, not the only thing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you should be able to... I feel like Miiverse is not a great way to send messages to your friends directly.
No.
It's not
no,
a good way to like, have a conversation.
That.
It's no. It's way too slow. It takes too long to get into. It's probably not something that you check all the time because it takes 30 seconds to bring. You know, like on PS4, I push a button. I can check my messages from friends in 1 second.
Yep.
And on Miiverse, it takes about at least 30 seconds. So, you know, when you're communicating online with people, 30 seconds can be a long time. Especially to check whether you have anything. What if you load it up, you don't have anything, then you have to close it, and it takes another 30 seconds to get back in your game. You know, that's not something you're going to do very often. It's just,
yep.
It's kind of too much trouble. These minor things like loading times, they make a big difference with usability of a feature like that. But I think it's still a good idea, and I would like to see Miiverse continue on NX.
I imagine it will because they've integrated it into so many of their first party games. And I mean they had it before Nintendo Network had really fully been realized anyway.
True. Okay, well that's gonna do the show. So thank you everyone for listening and for writing in. I want to say that we actually have quite a bit of email that's really good that we just didn't have time to get to, even though we did four questions this week. We're going to do some more next week, I hope, and we'll try to catch up a little bit. But there's a few people, Leo and Jason and a few other people who've written in and have probably been waiting very patiently for their letter to be answered on the show. We will get to those hopefully next time. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for the time and effort that that all of you put into writing to the show. We love getting these emails. We love reading them, and we try to respond to almost all of them. We do as many as that we can. So again, thank you very much for helping us make this show, and you can continue to do that at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, or head over to the website, click on the show notes, the episode article for this one, and there's always a link there for the email page. So that's it. Please look forward to next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.